Good morning. I know I'm a minute or two early. Just wanted to drop in real quick before time. Make sure Zoom was happy today. I don't know if y'all use Zoom on a regular basis, but it was shut down nationally, kind of worldwide, I guess, maybe yesterday. I don't know. But so we were unable to Zoom yesterday. Glad to be here with y'all. Hope you had a great weekend. Weather is cooling off a little bit. Nice outside. Life is good. Looking forward to today. We're going to do Q&A today. I'll cover a few questions that I've been sent. I brought with me, but also hoping that you all, through live Q&A, we'll submit some questions today as well so we can interact a little bit, a little different format. Forgive me while I open these notes. But I'm hoping that today will be interactive with questions and so forth. I am going to do a little review just to set the table, maybe prompt some thoughts. Thank you for questions that are sent. Through live Q&A, I noticed very quickly the first week, you can turn on anonymity and turn it off. And so the first week when we were able to post anonymous things, we had many, many, many comments and thoughts along the way. And then when I turned that off, our questions and comments went down probably 90% for some reason. So I cut it back on today. So you can ask questions anonymously, you can make comments if possible, whatever makes sense. So thank you again for being part of this journey. As you know, I believe everything rises and falls on leadership. And leadership is simply, in my opinion, your ability to influence. And when I talk about influence and I talk about how I believe it impacts your entire world, that's what I believe. Like, not just your professional position, your what you're watching this for, but I believe as a husband, a wife, a mom, a dad, a friend, I think the more you know how to utilize your leadership skills, your influences, in your comprehensive world, I just believe the world gets better. And I have over 30 years of diving into leadership and studying and teaching and so forth. And I just believe that's kind of how it works. So I'm going to review. And as I go, feel free to jump in with comments. Here's a couple things maybe to set the table. Have you been challenged with trying to implement anything that we've talked about? And what I mean by challenged is, have you run into anything that you don't know how to get past it, or you're not sure how to apply it in certain areas, or successes? I love successes. If you have applied any of this in any area of your life, personally or professionally, and you're seeing the fruit, the results of it, let's share that as well. And so I do have a few questions I'll share in a moment, but here's the review of where we've been in the last few weeks. And one is just to increase your influence. Just think of leadership as a verb, not as a noun, not as a title or a position, but rather something that's always in motion. That way you're never like arriving at a place, got that title, I'm done type thought. Even, you know, I work with business owners of very large companies, and they're always trying to keep evolving themselves. And so they're, in my opinion, there's never an end game here. We're always trying to learn skill sets. And I recommend that you don't try to learn 10 skill sets, 20 skill sets, but you keep raising your batting average in 2 or 3, maybe 5. I don't know if it's 5, but 3-ish. Things that you do really well, and you just get better and better at them over time. But the key here is to always be honest with yourself. I gave you a question that I hope you did something with it. And the question is, what's it like to sit across the table from me? And you ideally need to have that input from people personally and professionally that can give you unfiltered, no agenda, unbiased feedback to let you know kind of where your strengths and or weaknesses are, like how you come across, how well do you do connecting, where do your defense mechanisms kick in, how's your body language, different things that would ideally raise your influence in the world. And so the entry level we talked about is your title, your position. And I know everywhere we go, there are people who lead from the position, from their title. And here's where some of us learned it first, and that was home. We learned title leadership, positional leadership. If you're, as long as you're under my roof, you're going to do what I say, my way or the highway. If you don't like what I'm telling you, you can get out. And that's a positional leadership that many of us saw modeled literally growing up. And so we see it in the workforce. When I worked at Dominion Power for 6.5 years, I had a very positional supervisor and maybe the worst leader I ever had in my life, but I couldn't do anything about it. And comments, the questions is, what if you're stuck? And I've written some answers to it. Like I was stuck. I was union. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't navigate out of it, but I kept growing. I continued to take every course, everything they offered me, keep developing myself. And so if you feel stuck, you feel like maybe you're bumping against a leader or a that you feel held back or feel like you're maybe in the wrong seat on the right bus or whatever, don't in any way hold your personal development back. Podcasts, books, seminars, courses, college, whatever it is that you can keep developing yourself, because there's going to be a time when a position opens up for you later down the path that you want to be ready for. So you move from this positional to permission-based leadership, ideally through relationships. You have to connect with people, period. And I mentioned in that session that in today's flattened world, we cannot afford to not play well with others. It will affect our influence. And so learning to connect, learning how to build rapport, and learning how to use your body language, learning how to listen. There's a lot of things we're going to dig into more specifically in the next few weeks, but just being present, learning how to connect with people is a major shift from that whole transactional to the relational aspect of leading. And in my opinion, it's one of the biggest changes leaders have to make. And that is, how do you go from this task, checking the box, getting things done, to leveraging your relationships with your team or those who report to you? And it's not an easy transition for everybody. And the truth is, not everybody makes the transition. And so this permission-based, we talked about, you have to like people and be likable. It really matters. And again, not everybody cares. Not everybody wants to go here, and it's okay. But if you want to leverage your influence, it's learning, connect, learning to get past some things that may be differences or difficulties. And this is where we talked about the platinum rule. It's treat others the way they want to be treated. And one of the ways that shows up in my life is I don't celebrate well. When I had a staff, I had to be made aware of, you need to stop, you need to celebrate, you need to acknowledge, you know, so-and-so's been doing a great job, because my mindset is just go. And so you may have areas to where you realize like you're not doing a good job of connecting people with that platinum rule thought of adding value in the way they want to be added value to. And so A question I gave you is, what would your direct reports define your style as, relational or transactional, position or permission? And if you didn't ask that, ask somebody again across the table what it's like to, what is it like to sit across the table from you? And this rapport, this subconscious thing, it happens in your brain. Like everywhere you go, your brain, your amygdala is deciding if you're safe or not. It does it all the time. You don't have to think about it. It's just always scanning. And back in the time of caveman, it was scanning the forest for saber-tooth tigers or whatever. And it still does what it's always done. It's a part of your, what they call your crocodile brain. It's always wondering, are you safe? And if not, this is where fight, flight, or freeze comes from. And to build rapport means you get past somebody's amygdala triggers. You get past that sense of uneasiness, this angst. And one of the ways that I think expedites this is finding affinities, finding ways to connect with people, finding common ground. Doesn't mean you have to be like them. Doesn't mean you have to like everything they like. Just find something that you can, me too. I like that. Yes, I understand. And you connect with them, because if not, their amygdala, and it's not tangible. It's always just kind of edgy and it doesn't know why. And to lead people, to gain permission, you want them to trust you. You want them to feel like they can trust you as a leader. And so rapport is this thing that where they conclude, you're like me, so I can trust you. And influence is tied to that. Some habits you have to develop in this arena is be present. We can be so transactional that we're walking down the hall literally telling Sarah she needs to get the copies made. Or we can even have staff or team meetings and it'd be so agenda driven that we don't know how to connect. And ideally, not to get off topic, but you should have a leader's meeting template that you use, to where literally you know how you don't have to show it to anybody, but there's a way to be present, there's a way to celebrate, there's a way to acknowledge, and it's a prompt for you. But being more self-aware and listening, just making eye contact is a huge thing, because when you're not making eye contact, it's saying to that person, you're not listening. What I'm saying is not important. You're not hearing what I'm saying. It doesn't matter. And whether that's personal at home or professional, just making eye contact, turning your shoulders to who you're talking to, will massively change the feeling of that connection. Another piece while I'm on it, just the direction your feet are pointed when you're talking to somebody. If they're squared off, it says, I'm with you. If they're turned, like you're walking down the hall, but you're turned to face them, where your feet are pointed is actually where you're wanting to go. And so subconsciously, it's sending messages. And to connect with people, to earn their permission, this is where that presence, that mindfulness, that staying in the moment really starts paying off, but matters. And then production, the third level we talked about, is where, because you're connecting with people, your team, your department, your staff start performing at a higher level. And so position, permission, production. And what happens is your team starts being known. Your department starts being known for kind of living above the bar a little bit. And this is the level you can't fake. You have position given to you. You don't have to do anything for that. Permission, you can kind of pseudo walk through that, but you can't fake results. And so if you're not doing a good job in the permission, you're not necessarily going to do a good job in the production. But here you start being known as a leader on your team as well as outside of your team. Others are taking note of your leadership now because you're leading well. And I just believe everybody likes to be led well. Intuition comes into play here. You start making leadership decisions that are not just the science, but they're the art of it. You've connected well. You know how to draw the best out of Becky. You know how to connect with Art. You know how to talk to Bob. You know how to cheer them on. You know how, and all at once, the synergy of your team starts elevating itself because you're leading scientifically and artistically, and it just starts paying big dividends. And then the fourth shift is individual development. This is where you're not only producing a lot from your team, but now I'm going to thank you for your leadership because you've made a difference in my life. And obviously, if I've not connected with the individuals on the team, I don't know how to add value to them. I don't know what their aspirations are. I don't know how to help them navigate whatever they're trying to do. But what happens here is your effectiveness starts multiplying. You start developing individuals who they become more autonomous. They become experts in different fields to where everyone is going up the ladder together. And I did talk about, like, in this arena, there's going to be times personalities struggle with this. Like, insecure or codependent people are going to struggle with letting other people become great, letting other people fly, giving trophies away. Napoleon Bonaparte said that men will die for ribbons. And when we know what the ribbons are that people need, we know how to give them ribbons, and they will work better and harder just because we're celebrating and adding value to them. So anyway, that's a pretty quick flight. Obviously, all the recordings go much deeper into this. I'm going to cover three questions, and feel free to drop questions in the Q&A, comments, anything that, well, one, just question on anything we've covered. Two, if in growing or trying to apply something, you've run into your own thinking or physical, tangible challenges you don't know what to do with. Three, I would love to hear any wins that you have, tried this, got this, or I've been doing this, I see this. And you can just put them in the Q&A. You can do so anonymously. Again, I changed that for everybody. So I would love to hear from you a little bit today, but I'm going to read a few questions that I have in front of me. And one is, what's the hardest level to grow into? As we talked about, going from position to permission to production, individual development, pinnacle, I don't even deal with really. But here's what I think makes sense as you go. Like, to go from one to two, position to permission, the hardest thing is to earn people's permission to influence them. I, as a dad, my youngest kid is 19, my oldest is 30. I practice this as a dad as well as a leader, to where, like, knowing my kids as they would grow up would have all these voices in their life, I wanted to be a voice. And so I had to figure out how, as a leader in my home, to have permission to influence a 14-year-old, a 16-year-old, and now a 19, 27, and a 30-year-old. And so not only should this be thought about, like, professionally, but personally, like, how do I earn people in my life their permission to influence them, to lead them? And I think it's hard to navigate that. I think it's not a natural thing, because we typically want the followers to be there, but we don't necessarily think through, how can I influence or raise my potential to influence them? And then the third level, like, how do we get to that productive area? I think the challenge there is that we learning to appreciate the collective value of your team. How, if you have two, if it's you and another person, that's a team. If you have 22, if you have 72, like, learning to appreciate that everyone on your team brings a value, and ideally, without built-in redundancy, everyone brings a unique value, perspective, insight to the team. And to exploit that to its highest level is knowing how to draw all the juice out of the team, knowing how to really, like, as they say, sometimes run on all eight cylinders, like getting that team where it's a humming machine. And not everybody knows how to navigate that. And I would suggest that's a challenge for all of us to figure out. How do we elevate our team? How do we deal with the more difficult or the least agreeable people or person on our team? How do we get past some things that maybe they've not known how to get past themselves? And then for the fourth one, going to people production, how do I help the individuals? And I think the thing that gets in the way here is the pace of the job, the pace of corporate America. Like, we're always, you know, knocking off checklists. And like at Canon, I worked at their call center for a while, and they are, every call is recorded by the seconds, and they're timed to be off phones by seconds. And so when I was teaching some of this there, slow down, make eye contact, figure out how to connect with Bob and Susan and all, this was like a mind blow for some of them, because all they could think was hang up the phone, pick up the phone, hang up the phone, and to develop that further. And yet they were some of the first ones to come back and thank me just for helping them see the individuals around them instead of the job that we always have to get done. So I think here it's knowing how, what would, like, if I worked for you, knowing what my goals are and how you could add value to me trying to accomplish them. And like I shared, like, share a book with somebody, just email the staff with a hyperlink to a book you read or a podcast or a seminar, a webinar. And sometimes it's literally an individual. Like, I heard this and I thought this would really help you with what you're trying to do. And they start respecting you because you're hearing them and connecting at a deeper level. Second question, what gets in the way of leaders making these changes? Insecurity will get in the way. There's a thing in our brain. One of my coaches called it the terror barrier, but it's the, anytime we try something new, we get too attached to the immediacy of the feedback. And so what happens is the moment we change, we want to look at the results and get immediate feedback because we need that positive input. But what happens is if the feedback is not what we wanted or needed, we immediately conclude it's not working and we'll go back to the old way. And ideally, the way the universe is wired is when we level our thinking to a different place, it will show up in the results. But sometimes we have to separate from the results long enough to trust the process. And an example I've used in this before is if you cut 100 calories out of your diet, 100 calories a day, and you step on the scale tomorrow, the scale is going to tell you that's not working. Nothing changed. And as a matter of fact, it's about 25 days, I forget the exact number, before the cumulative of that will show up on the scale. It'll take that long to lose a pound. And so days, let's just say 25 days, days 1 through 24 are going to tell you this is not working. But day 25, the bell rings, the lights come on, it says, yes, the change you made is paying off. And then, of course, just 100 calories a day for a year, it's 12 pounds or more. And I think we do this as leaders. We make a change and we look at the scale. We look at the R, the results, whatever it is, and the feedback can be wrong. It can sometimes not validate our change, and we immediately can digress. So what I think gets in the way of making changes is this insecurity of new, like this fear of failure or not trusting some of these things. And so we keep pulling back. Like, even this journey we're talking about right now, we could maybe try to connect with somebody and it doesn't pay off, and it'll be like, I knew I shouldn't have done that. Or you connect with somebody and it goes south. It just doesn't work out well. And the conclusion could be to pull back from that, as opposed to you have a whole team, you have a whole world still to influence. I'm going to try to keep up with questions as they come in. I think a lot of people struggle with being transparent and finding ways to get their staff to buy in. I truly believe when you're open with them and find ways to make them feel included, important, then you get more of a buy-in, and they'll make sure of an effort to do, make more of an effort to do their best, take their job seriously. When you build that connection, many times you don't even need to motivate. I agree with this 100%. People, because they're motivated by wanting to put in their best, because they believe in growth. Yes. Angelique, yeah, I agree 100% with that. And one thing I want to talk about, we're actually going to do a session on this, is building trust. I work with some college sports teams in the area, and one of the first things I do, because like they're in a season, they don't have 2 years to decide if they trust each other. And one of the very first session I do is this deep trust building exercise that immediately within an hour changes the entire team. And it's all built on vulnerability and openness, this candidness that you speak of. And so if I say, if Angelique would say, I don't know if I trust Bob, what she's really saying is, I don't really know Bob, right? And the quicker people can know us, the quicker we relax that, can I trust you? And it goes back to, do I know you? Do I trust you? Have I seen you? Or are you, you know, corporate Bob and you're plastic or whatever? So it's a great insight, Angelique. I appreciate that. Let me see here. Sean Bo, what are my thoughts on servant leadership? Servant leadership, to me, I agree with it 100%. I just know in corporate America, sometimes just the term starts getting bucked and kicked against. However, that whole term, like, it comes from a value place, right? And to be a servant leader means ideally you're trying to elevate others and you're putting yourself in a lesser place. So there's a balance, I think, there, Sean, to where you are adding value to others, and you know the core value or the place you're operating from. But that term, as you probably know just by using it or asking it, doesn't get a lot of press. Or to get more buy-in, like, I've taught servant leadership here without using the term. And there's a way to navigate that, I think, where people would be more acceptable and open to it, as opposed to, what do you mean servant leadership? And so yeah, I'm all about it. I could go much deeper in that in another direction that has transformed my life massively. Leticia, I tried to get more personable and become likable with the team, but when I did, the team got comfortable and mistakes were being made that caused double work. Leticia, I appreciate you sharing this, by the way. That may be tied back to the scale, right? But also realize, like, getting comfortable, getting closer to people doesn't mean I'm lowering expectations or the job, because you and I are all going to lose our job if we get comfortable and what we're hired for falls off the rails. And so there is a way to connect, but still be assertive. Like, short of aggressive is assertive, right? You want to live in an assertive role to where you're still the leader, and yet you're modeling that they're not just a number to you. They're not just a task. They are a person or human beings. And I would highly, and feel free to ask or email me or whatever, I would highly encourage you, like, don't let that conclusion lead you to backing up, because if we were going into completely uncharted territory that no human's ever been in, I would get it. But we can navigate this, I promise you. And there may be, you know, just trying to think through how you approached it or whatever. So I don't give up on it. And however I can help you, I would love to. Another question, how do we go about leading those who are continuously not honest with themselves about their abilities? On the surface, they appear to be bought in, but it's not genuine and yields no value. Yeah, and thank you for that question, by the way. My wife will tell me, I've been married 34 years. My wife will tell me from time to time, she doesn't need a coach because I go right into question mode. I'll ask questions and she'll stop me. And so my answer to this is, with that person or persons, what type of question may you be able to ask, or questions, conversation that may open that up? Let me see. Let me read it again and see if I could come up. How do we go about leading those who are going to? I don't know, again, corporate parameters here. And so I would, if they have a home run, I would ask how, like, help them to identify. And if they don't have a home run, but something's behind or something's not getting done, you say yields no positive results, I would probably ask questions to that person, like, what's missing? How can I help? Where are we not connecting here? And again, corporately, like, you, I may be out of bounds here for some rules or parameters and don't know who, you know, where you work. So, but I would ask questions. To answer your question, I would ask questions and try to figure out more data from that person. And normally it's asking 2, 3, 4, 5 questions that you start getting to some real answers from the person, and be okay with quiet between you while they think of real answers. So not easy, you know, and again, I would encourage you, like, attaboy, attagirl for trying to connect or deal with, but don't lose sight of the other 11 on the team while you're doing that also, because there is a huge ROI in this process. Let me see. Elizabeth, you may have already, but you have, how to address boundaries in the relationship between super. Yeah, to me, it's kind of an overlap to where I was a moment ago. The boundary should never be a question. Like I don't need to know about your personal life in ways to where it's like, we just shouldn't be there. I high level conversation, you know, how's it going? Like, what would be a goal you're working on? Like, you know, what's your greatest challenge here in the job? But never getting in the weeds with people, because as we know, that can just get into some real, some bad places. And so, you know, I think if anything, Elizabeth, overarching, most people, the boundaries are too wide. And then, of course, people that are susceptible, or maybe the boundaries get too thin. And so it's a matter of, the supervisor is always the supervisor. They have to be mature enough to keep it always a supervisor, corporately, group setting, one-on-one, and yet be comfortable with being able to connect with somebody at a level to where that person has concluded, not in a weird way, but you want them to succeed as a professional. So thanks for asking that, by the way. Angelique, at what point do you recognize that the person can't or isn't willing to change or develop? Yeah. It wasn't asked, by the way. One, when you say, how would you let them know? If that is a permission you have, that's exactly how I do that. Like if, again, the agenda is, I want to help that person, they're just not in the right seat. If I have the ability to help them change seats, If not, I'm going to start asking them questions like, it seems like you're not happy here, or it seems like you've hit a wall, like what's going on? And so, but the truth is, like, we get hired for our competency, right? But part of what helps us navigate higher is capacity. And not everybody's going to have the same capacity. Not everybody is has the same ability to go. And so at the same time, you know, Angelique, you're a dreamer. I know you have high aspirations. I've seen your LinkedIn stuff, okay? And other people are not. And I don't mean overarching. I mean, just some people, they're happy with where they're at, and they don't want the responsibility of leadership. They don't want to take on any more than they have. And it may just be because they have a lot going on personally. It's okay. And so as we evaluate people in what we may conclude they're stuck or they're not going anywhere, some of those people are absolutely satisfied with where they are and they don't want to go anywhere. So just make sure you don't confuse or mix the two up as well. So I want to encourage effective behaviors without being too patronizing. Thanks, Janet. I think if as long as you're coming from a sincere heart, Janet, it will come across right. Don't celebrate menial things. Celebrate patterns or habits that not only you want that person to repeat, but that you want the team to hear you celebrate. And so if you said, you know, to who's on here, if you said to Elizabeth, hey, I just want to tell you, like, you kicked tail last week. Like, man, it was an amazing widget you made or whatever. And you do that in a way to where she doesn't feel like, yeah, you're saying that. Is it switching gears here? When my son was growing up, he's 27 now, they started this thing in rec ball, baseball, participation awards, right? And everyone started getting a trophy. And it's like, what in the world? Like, life doesn't reward us for participation. Life rewards us for real stuff. And so I would say, like, just make sure you're not giving participation awards away. And here's going back to what Angelique says too, like, you're looking for the high-flying leaders to applaud. And it's hard when you can't applaud somebody who's not doing anything. However, that's reality. And so I wouldn't look at somebody else and make something up. If they're doing their best and you can applaud it, applaud the heck out of it. However, don't applaud when you know I'm 40% and one day I did a little bit and you're like, that was awesome, Bob. No, it wasn't. Like, just challenge me. And not everybody wants to be challenged. So let me see. AJ, good morning. I tend to allow give projects that enhance the mission of the PD, police department. I study the individual and find things that they have an interest in and then have them build the project. I love that. I try to show trust. Yep. And build it and gives ownership. It's easier with some generations, but overall, yeah, I love that, man. Great insight. AJ, you know, like, giving away, as you said, like, it speaks to trust already. And then when you help people create wins, you're building their confidence, you're building your influence in their life, but you also are raising them up as a leader to where they're going to be better for that. And this goes back partly also where I said, like, celebrate wins and own the defeats. Like, if you can give a win to somebody, you are going to elevate them as a leader, no question, or a person, no question about it. And so when you set people up for wins, somebody's win may be a much smaller step than another person's. And as you get to know each other, like AJ said, setting them up for wins, like, what you may be able to hand me may be far lesser than what you could hand somebody else. However, as you connect with the individuals, you start knowing what to hand away, and then kind of where their challenges are, and then you can also resource them. Is that something you love? Yeah, I love that. Here's a book. Here's, you know, there's a class being offered. I want to pay for you to go to it or whatever. So, so keep asking questions. I will keep answering them. I have two more I want to cover. When the one I was on, what gets in the way of making consistent changes here, or making the changes? Lack of consistency. Don't do this on a Monday and not Tuesday through Friday and wonder why it's not working. This is a find something you can do. One piece. Don't find 12. Just find one thing you could start doing consistently as a leader. It could be giving away attaboys and attagirls. It could be having team meetings and celebrating wins. It could be just challenging people. It could be stopping by everyone's desk once a week. Like, find a thing that you could consistently do that would start elevating your influence, and then put another one on top of it and another one on top of it. But lack of consistency, like, it's like going to work out once a month. It's not going to do anything but make you sore. So don't go half on any of this. Gets in the way, expecting results faster than practical. Like, we do something, we want to change. We do something, and it's Happy Meal, right? And it takes consistency, trust in the process, and then learning to grow yourself so you can grow others. Like, on that scale of 1 to 10, if you would hold yourself at a 6, then you can't lead 8s. They're going to be frustrated as all get out with you, and vice versa. And so the goal is, you go from a 5 to a 6, 6 to an 8, 8 to a 9, then the capacity, the capability of the team that you're leading can keep elevating as well. So what gets in the way of making changes is making sure you're changing yourself. And then the last question, the third one, is what if you're stuck? And as I touched on, like, don't wait on self-development. Read, watch, listen, take in. And then in the same one, be very specific in your growth. Don't read generic books. If you want to grow as a communicator, find the best communication book you can. If you want to grow as a leader, find a great leader. If you want to learn the Pareto principle, buy a book on Pareto. If you want to learn how to delegate, buy a book on delegation. But be specific, because you go to the bookstore, all the books are beautiful, and that's not a good way to buy a book. And I've read hundreds and hundreds, and if you need a book on a topic, I may know one. A book I know we touched on, you know, a couple of weeks ago, The 5 Levels of Leadership. I was supposed to recommend one. I went back and looked at it. Just, it wasn't something I wanted to throw out. But I would recommend, like, always knowing how you're growing yourself. I still study communication. I still read leadership books. I still study my mind, conscious, subconscious behaviors, always trying to learn how to grow myself. So I'm make sure I'm not missing a question. And if you have any others, make sure you ask. But I love the questions today, and I appreciate it so much. So let me see here. Sean, thank you for your question. Anonymous, thank you. Elizabeth, thank you. Angelique, thank you again. Janet, thank you. Angelique, you're welcome. Leticia, thank you. AJ, thank you. So anyway, gang, I appreciate this. This is actually incredibly fun for me to interact and kind of go live on questions and so forth. Next week, we will be diving into the continuing laying the foundation of being an amazing leader in today's world. So email me at any time, anything I can do to add value to you. And don't forget, like, these are always recorded, uploaded to the link every one of you should have, dropped in a folder in Dropbox, and you have access to all of them. They're all in the same folder. So if you have the link, it works to everything we've done and will do. So, all right, gang, I appreciate you. Hope you have an amazing day. This is the only day you have, so don't waste it. Squeeze the juice out of it and enjoy everything that comes your way. Have a great day. Bye-bye.